Picture yourself on Sunday evening, that sinking feeling creeping in as Monday looms. Is that dread about your job or something deeper? A question about whether the life you're building is the one you actually want? This isn't just career anxiety. It's an existential crisis playing out in millions of lives simultaneously. After the Great Resignation shook the foundations of how we think about work, we're left with a more fundamental question. Not just whether to stay or bow, but whether our work is genuinely worth the finite hours of life we're trading for it. Consider Wang Junchao, a Chinese general who fled to Brazil in 1949, failed in business, yet continued working unpaid into old age, sharing wisdom and Confucian values with his family. His story reveals something crucial. Work isn't just what pays the bills. It's purposeful, effortful, and recognized by society, though each element contains contradictions that make defining worthy work far more complex than it appears. Anthropologist David Graeber identified bullshit jobs, pointless white-collar positions where workers pretend their role matters while adding nothing meaningful. Meanwhile, unpaid domestic labor remains invisible precisely because it's unpaid. Women still perform twice as much housework as men, even when earning equal or higher incomes. This creates a perverse cycle. An activity isn't paid because it's not perceived as work, and it's not perceived as work because it's not paid. When artist Damien Hirst faced critics claiming anyone could create his shark suspended in formaldehyde, he replied, "But you didn't, did you?" Society simultaneously craves and criticizes seemingly effortless achievement. The uncomfortable truth, those in power decide what qualifies as work, and economic markets determine not just whether something counts, but what it's worth, often creating an inverse relationship between compensation and actual societal value. Higher pay doesn't necessarily drive harder work. Frederick Hertzberg found that extrinsic rewards like pay prevent dissatisfaction, while intrinsic factors like achievement create genuine satisfaction. Paradoxically, monetary rewards can reduce motivation. Richard Titmus discovered that paying blood donors decreased donations, and pay-for-performance schemes often diminish intrinsic drive. Yet fairness matters enormously. We constantly compare what we give against what we receive relative to peers. Professor Amy Riznevsky identified three work orientations: job, means to an end; career, advancement and status; or calling, meaningful in itself. People distribute evenly across these categories in every occupation. Two people in identical roles can view their work entirely differently. Calling-oriented employees attract disproportionate managerial favoritism, though research shows they don't actually perform better. What matters more is recognizing each orientation can be self-focused or other-focused. The real question isn't which you have, but what your work brings to others, not just yourself. Michelle Obama believed lawyers worked all the time, measuring worth by billable hours. Her friend Suzanne Allel chose differently, traveling the world, eating curry in Cambodia, dancing at the Taj Mahal. When Suzanne died of cancer at 26, Michelle reflected, "Suzanne had lived in ways that I had not." This frames our fundamental dilemma: work diligently like the ant to secure the future, or live freely like the grasshopper, prioritizing present joy. Research on affective forecasting reveals we're terrible at predicting our emotional futures. We imagine being devastated by career setbacks when reality tends toward moderation. Yet for millions working multiple jobs, between 20 to 36% believe they'll never retire. Four-day workweek experiments show promise. The 100-80-100 model, full pay for 80% hours at 100% productivity, increased revenue while reducing turnover. Meanwhile, hustle culture glorifies constant work, despite research showing we can only maintain focus for 5 hours daily, and burnout affects 30 to 75% of workers. We've made exhaustion a badge of honor. The pay gap between highest and lowest paid workers exploded from 59 to 1 in 1989 to 399 to 1 in 2021. Amazon's Andy Jassy earned 6,474 times the median worker's pay, yet meaningful work pays less. Clergy, the most meaningful profession, earned just $46,600 on average. Teachers, social workers, and nurses rank high in satisfaction but low in compensation. Jobs benefiting society often serve those who can't afford to pay much, and workers with intrinsic motivation accept lower wages. The gender pay gap compounds this. Women earned 84 cents per dollar men made in 2020, with Black women earning 64 cents and Hispanic women 57 cents compared to white men. Women's unpaid domestic labor, estimated at $10.9 trillion annually worldwide, remains economically worthless yet societally invaluable. Kathleen Gluck's journey illustrates this disconnect. Rising from teenage law clerk to accounting partner, she discovered 80-hour weeks and a culture where individual partner revenue is a measure of personal value. During a major depressive episode, she realized she wasn't willing to die for this job. The paradox: markets often pay more for miserable work, while fulfilling work pays least, creating a world where financial and personal fulfillment rarely align. Colin Huggins hauls a 900-pound Steinway to Washington Square Park daily, inviting listeners to lie underneath and experience classical music as a wall of sound. For 15 years, he's survived solely on handouts in expensive New York City. He embodies the romantic ideal of work as calling, yet critics like Mia Tokimitsu argue this culture of calling drives overwork, burnout, and inequality. Millions of Americans play instruments, but only about 1,000 classical orchestras exist in the U.S., with just a fraction offering living wages. While calling-oriented workers report higher satisfaction and engagement, the trade-offs are stark. Strongly called zookeepers sacrifice personal health for their animals, often earning less than passionate colleagues. Studies show employers feel justified paying passionate workers less because their passion compensates for pay. Paul Gauguin abandoned his wife and five children to paint in the South Seas, dying in obscurity. Even PepsiCo CEO Indra Nooyi called her career the honor of a lifetime while regretting time not spent with her children. The lesson: pursuing your calling at all costs may fulfill you while leaving casualties in its wake. COVID-19 revealed which workers were truly essential. Not just healthcare workers, but grocery clerks, delivery drivers, sanitation workers. Yet the 9/11 Victim Compensation Fund exposed society's skewed values. Awards ranged from $250,000 to over $7 million, with first responders receiving nearly $1 million less than higher-earning financiers. Essential work's use value often exceeds its market exchange value. Philosopher Norman Kerr posed a fundamental question: should we prioritize self-realization or service to others? Moral duty suggests service, but this creates martyrs. Bess Hargreaves left corporate law for nonprofit work, helping women in poverty. Despite finding meaning, 12 years of low pay and overwhelming caseloads led to burnout through a pervasive cult of self-martyrdom. Philosopher Susan Wolfe suggests truly purposeful work exists at the intersection of subjective attraction and objective attractiveness, personally rewarding while objectively worthy. Fewer than 20% achieve this alignment. Perhaps purpose emerges across a portfolio of activities rather than one perfect position. Your legacy won't be measured in metrics, but in stories about how you lived and what your work contributed.